And we're back with Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In 1951, the Cold War was at a fever pitch. War raged in Korea. The Iron Curtain had fallen across Europe. And in the Nevada desert, the U.S. military held training exercises for nuclear war by setting off actual nuclear explosions.
And in New York, a remarkable story was playing out in a courtroom.
One of the greatest peacetime spy dramas in the nation's history reaches its climax as Julius Rosenberg and Morton Sobel, convicted of revealing atomic secrets to the Russians, enter the federal building in New York to hear their doom.
Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were convicted of spying, for conspiring to pass secrets of the atomic bomb to the Soviet Union, for which they were executed by electric chair. It was the highest profile case of the so-called Red Scare, when the hunt for communist infiltrators drove the country to a frenzy.
Today, the Howard Gottlieb Archival Research Center at Boston University is unveiling a new exhibit featuring a collection of documents from the case, including more than 500 letters the Rosenbergs wrote from prison. The legacy of their case is also the subject of a panel discussion tonight at BU that will include two of my guests who are with me right now. Our old friend John Carroll, professor of communications at BU, will moderate the discussion. Thanks for being with us, John.
Good to be here.
Also joining us is Robert Mirapol. He's the younger son of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, and he was 6 years old when they were executed. He's also the author of a memoir that came out in 2003 entitled An Execution in the Family, One Son's Journey. And Robert Mirapol, welcome to you. It's very good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
John, I want to start with you since you're going to be moderating this discussion later this evening. This case has been talked about for years, dissected by historians for years now. Why do you think it's still so relevant?
Well, I think the way the discussion is going to go tonight is to look at the case of the Rosenbergs and of Edward Snowden, the ongoing saga of Edward Snowden, to look at these sort of two landmark situations, an accusation of espionage, although one might be whistleblowing. We don't really haven't settled that yet. But really, cases that sort of defined a certain period of time in foreign policy, in sort of the political climate, the cultural climate, and I think we're going to be looking for the echoes and the parallels between the two, because in many ways they're apples and PCs, but in many ways also they have these sort of echoes of each other.
Well, I want to come back to that whole idea about those parallels between the Edward Snowden case and the Rosenberg case, and whether to what extent they're real. But Robert Mirapol, let me come to you. As one of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg's two sons, it's obvious that this case is still relevant to you. But in what way should it still be relevant to this nation?
Well, I think that, first of all, Snowden is being tried under the Espionage Act, the very same act that my parents were tried under, and cases or issues of loyalty, patriotism, civic responsibility, they all echo down through the ages. So I think that's one of the things that's going on here. But also, I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that what is unique about this program and this exhibit and this archive is that everybody talks about the Rosenberg case, but this is really about Rosenberg people.
What do you mean by that? Explain that a little bit.
Well, in the history of the world, there is no similar set of correspondence between a condemned couple who were then executed. This is, the word unique is overused, but this is unique. And it is the biggest window into who these people were as people. And I think one of the things that happened, whether it be Snowden or whether it be my parents, is people who were caught up in these iconic cases that deal with national security, the secret of the atomic bomb, treason, etc., all of those kind of issues, they're demonized. Or they are lionized. And, of course, the reality of who these people are as people is often much more complex, much more nuanced, and ultimately much more interesting.
Well, Robert, I want to ask, you mentioned these letters, and many of your parents' letters from prison that they wrote before they were executed were published a long time ago, but there are more letters in this new exhibit, and they're poignant. As you say, they're reminders that these people were also parents. I'm just going to read a couple of lines, if that's okay, because here's a line that Ethel Rosenberg wrote about you and your brother Michael. Quote, "Invariably, when I do think of them, I end up in a crying jag, and I feel I must go mad with wanting them." In another letter, your dad worries that an electric train might be too dangerous of a Christmas present for you and your brother. So poignant indeed, and I'm just wondering what you hear or read or think about in those words.
Well, I think very strongly about it, and it's actually defined my life. My life work, though I've recently retired, was starting and running a foundation, the Rosenberg Fund for Children, which provides for the educational and emotional needs of the children of what we call targeted activists. In other words, this foundation looks for people like me when they were kids and tries to help them. So that's what I've taken from this circumstance.
Sure.
And so these letters really resonate with me every day.
Sure. John, you know, I want to come back to this idea. I mean, tonight's discussion is called Rosenberg and Snowden. But, I mean, as you suggested, you know, this might be a sort of apples and oranges things, and I want to ask you about that. The Rosenbergs were convicted spies. Edward Snowden would view himself as a whistleblower, released his information to the public. Isn't that a far cry from what happened 51 years ago? Or more than 50 years, excuse me.
It depends on who you ask,
yeah.
And a lot depends on how you hold it up to the light. Edward Snowden, in a Wired magazine article, told the reporter that he left digital breadcrumbs all along the way while he was taking NSA documents, so that in a way he would be discovered, perhaps, but certainly that he would demonstrate that he was not engaged in espionage, that he was engaged in whistleblowing. He was not sending this information to foreign countries. I think one of the striking things is the difference in technology in terms of what was available and what the repercussions were of the technology. Edward Snowden has a very clean operation going. It's him. It's nobody else. He's got some reporters that he's fed these documents to. But in the case of the Rosenbergs, I mean, they needed a whole network. They needed copies typed up. You know, there are disputes over whether Ethel Rosenberg actually retyped any documents that went to the Soviets. They had to recruit couriers. They had to recruit other agents. It was a much more complicated process for them and left them exposed in a way that Edward Snowden was not exposed.
Robert, I mean, John brings up such an interesting idea, a set of ideas that I'm sure you've pondered, and that is, you know, would the case of your parents, or how would the case of your parents have played out differently today, in the age of WikiLeaks and committed computer hackers and so on and so forth?
Well, I may be echoing something that John said, but there's the one striking difference to me between the two cases is that, well, first of all, there's controversy about whether my mother was involved or not, and I believe that my mother played no active role in doing anything. But I also believe that my father did commit espionage. There's a big difference between taking material and giving it to another country, keeping it secret, but changing who's holding the secrets, and releasing the material to the public. That's a big difference and a key difference, and one, frankly, that I'm actually more comfortable with the idea of releasing these materials to the public than in giving stuff to another country.
Yeah. John, final thought. I mean, I was wondering, just remind us a little bit about the context of this case. A lot of evidence, of course, now that the Rosenbergs were guilty, but it's important to remember that this was the beginning of a time that ensnared so many innocent people.
Yes, and I think that it kicked off a witch hunt in terms of the communists, in terms of Joseph McCarthy, that had really resounding and lasting effects on the country. And I think that it was a difficult case, and I think that no one else has ever been put to death for espionage. In fact, there were only, up until the Obama administration, there were only three cases that were prosecuted under the Espionage Act. So I think that makes it distinctive and makes it particularly tragic.
Well, fascinating, distinctive, and tragic. John Carroll, he's a professor of communications at Boston University. He'll be moderating a panel tonight at BU about the legacy of the Rosenberg spy case. You can find a lot more information at radioboston.org. John, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And Robert Meeropol is the youngest son of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. He's a retired attorney. Thanks for joining us today, Robert Meeropol. Great pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station.
I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.